These words, which were first expressed in Latin, which is homo sum humani nihil a mi alium puto. And they were written by a Roman playwright named Terence, who was enslaved and brought from Africa to a place outside Rome. And his owner realized this Terence's brilliance and freed him. Terence then went to Rome and became a playwright. And this phrase was written in 165 BC. I heard these words spoken by Maya Angelou when I was in 10th grade in about 1972 or 3. My English teacher had us reading Maya Angelou's book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. And I lived on Long Island. I grew up on Long Island. And our whole 10th grade English classes from my high school went to a book and author luncheon that was being held by the Long Island newspaper. And we actually got to see Maya Angelou. I was 16 years old, and this was, it's been a highlight of my life. And my heart was completely pierced by this phrase, I am a human being, therefore nothing human is alien to me. And it's been something I've had on my back burner and perhaps my front burner my whole life since. And it just seems to get to the crux of the matter. And actually, when I was pondering this ideal for this morning and before that, I realized that I wanted to broaden this to perhaps in a more universal way, and thinking of the first phrase as something particular, and in a broad way that I am a being, therefore nothing that is alien to me. When we can include ourselves as part of the whole, our relationships with everything and what arises for us, our causes and conditions, can be accepted more fluidly. I know that I've heard Tenshin Roshi say, we humans have this idea that there's everything in the whole world, and then there's a little blip on the top of the world that's separate from everything else, and that's ourselves. And as Katagiri Roshi would say, that's ridiculous. So it is, we suffer so much by isolating ourselves and not acknowledging the fact that we're part of everything else. And there is no we apart from everything else. I've been also very fortunate to be in a study group with a number of my peers, and we've been studying this book, The Mountains and Waters Sutra, which is by Dogen, and Shohaku Okumura compiled this translation and has wonderful commentary. So, and in Japanese, it's called Sansuiko. He was a young Zen master at the time of his writing this fascicle. He was at his first temple that he established in 1233, that he had been in Japan, and then he had gone to China, and he was in China for approximately 10 years, maybe a little bit less. And when he came back, he was just living on his own for a while, and then he established his first temple. He wrote this sutra in 1240, and it's very poetic and beautiful, and he is completely immersed in the natural world and our connections to it. In this fascicle, Dogen expresses that mountains and waters are completely the teachings themselves. If we merge ourselves within the mountains and waters, there is no separation. And actually, even if we don't merge ourselves with mountains and waters, there is no separation, but we have to come to realize that there's no separation between everything in the whole world and the water and the mountains and us. But I'm going to concentrate a bit more on the water than the mountains this morning. So, in concrete terms, the average human is about 60% water. Our brains are 80 to 85% water. Our blood is 50% water. Our muscles are 70 to 75% water. And yet we don't recognize our intimate connection with the water. Most of us don't acknowledge this consciously. We're sustained by water in all aspects of our lives. When I'm thinking of this, I think of how many glasses of water I drink. And yet, in some way, even as I'm drinking that water and know that I need that water, I don't necessarily think this water is me and I am this water. But perhaps I'll think a little bit differently from now on. Yesterday, my husband and my granddaughter and I, she was in a burly trailer, and we all went out for a bike ride. And in our backyard, we have kind of a larger kiddie pool. And I was so hot, and my body was so tired. And I went into the water with Simbri, and I just laid myself in this cool water to cool off. And when I was thinking about that this morning, I was like, I was just there with the water again. There's that water again. Here I am. Here's that water. And there's so many ways that water is part of our lives. And Dogen uses water as a metaphor for Dharma nature, because Dharma nature is everywhere, it permeates everything. This is what Dogen has to say about water. Water is neither strong nor weak, neither wet nor dry, neither moving nor still, neither cold or hot, neither being or non-being, neither delusion nor enlightenment. Frozen, it is harder than diamonds. Who could break it? Melted, it is softer than milk. Who could break it? So no matter what form water takes, it can't be broken. It's there. Water is the reality of our lives. It seeps into every crack and crevice of life itself. Shohaku Okumura Roshi says that the hardest diamonds represents wisdom, and softer than milk represents compassion. So that wisdom and compassion is available to us everywhere. We just have to settle down and be mindful and recognize our connection and our interconnection with everything. Someone recently asked me about Shikantaza, just sitting. Shikan means just, and Taza means sitting. And I spoke to them about Shikan being physically doing Zazen. Shikan Taza isn't only about sitting in on our cushions. Shikan just is about just being present in our daily lives, every moment, with whatever we're doing, that just realizing our true nature, realizing our true Dharma nature of the water we are. This morning, I was working on finishing my talk and I went into my kitchen and there was a sink full of dishes. And instead of walking out of the kitchen saying, oh, I need to finish up my talk, I have no time for this, I looked at the dishes and I said, okay, it's time to do the dishes. So when the dishes were done, I made a cup of tea and I finished refining my talk. So the idea of Shikan, of just being with what is really what the Mountains and Water Sutra is about. It's about water, it's about what I am always, in each moment. Katagiri Roshi says, each moment is the universe. Each moment is a possibility for us to realize that we are just part of everything. And so I look at that in a very optimistic way. So at times when I'm not so mindful and I'm doing things that perhaps are unwholesome, there's always the next moment to change and pivot and go cultivate what is wholesome and let go of the seeds of unwholesomeness. So I was thinking that I wanted to further adapt that first phrase that I spoke of and say, I am water, therefore nothing that is water is apart from me. I wanted to read Dogen's reflection on water once more. I've created a short talk because Sosan had spoken to the priests last week she had done these breakout groups, but I understand that right now the host probably doesn't know how to create breakout groups, but I thought that we could have a good discussion about aspects of all of this after this. Water is neither strong nor weak, neither wet nor dry, neither moving nor still, neither cold nor hot, neither being or non-being, neither delusion nor enlightenment. Frozen, it is harder than diamond. Who could break it? Melted, it is softer than milk. Who could break it? So I thought we could possibly use these teachings and think about what's currently going on in our society or anything that's happening in our lives right now, and thinking of our complete interconnection with everything, all beings, and with everything we do and everything we're a part of. So I know my talk is short, but I'm hoping that we can have a nice discussion now. So please unmute yourself if you would like to speak. Well, I think in the Shuso ceremony we say, dragons and elephants, give me your questions or comments, please.
I will say something.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I guess my experience with this, or like to kind of like, I find myself a lot of the time trying not to be, or not to acknowledge that. Like you started your talk out with, you said, you know, that we can acknowledge all things, and then we imagine that there is kind of like a little thread poking off of that, and that's me, and I'm different from everything, it's special. And it's hard to escape that idea. And even in meditation, I think that that is the truth. So even sitting this morning, just before the talk, I catch myself thinking, my new activity while I'm meditating is I try to identify the thought and then identify if it's in the future or in the past. Because very rarely am I thinking about, right, if I was doing that, then I wouldn't be thinking. I'd just be experiencing it. So I say, okay, it's in the past. And then where is it coming from? Is it greed? Is it hate? Or is it delusion? Am I trying to make myself into someone else? Am I upset about something? Or do I want something? And these are all the things that separate me from being water or being right with the moment. And then sometimes, once I can realize, oh, that was a thing, I'm right back here. And it's nice. And then I'm pulled away. But I come back. And so I think I actually did about a minute of actual meditating in the half hour that I was sitting this morning. But I think that's pretty good. So that's what I have to say. Thank you. It was a tremendous talk. And that's I'll bow.
Well, I have a couple of responses. Is that everything, your whole 30 minutes, it's all meditation. Not just one moment when perhaps you're letting go of your thoughts. That was one thing I wanted to say. And I second thing I wanted to say is, you silly person, you are saying I'm classifying these things as past or present, but it's right now.
Fair enough. It is and it isn't. I guess once again, I'm creating the thread. I'm putting myself in the thread. So you're right.
Thank you.
I keep thinking of, for myself, when I came to Zen, or really got pretty serious about practice a few years ago, what's changed. And I think in the past, I always felt like I wanted everything to be concrete, you know, this and that, and something I could just hold on to. And I remember when I was going through Jukai, I was feeling really uneasy. I was sitting a lot, and I said to Sosan, I said, I just want something concrete in this practice. And she said, you're in the wrong place. I guess concrete needs water. But I also, just one more thing is that one thing that I've noticed in the past few years from practicing is that as a teacher, I used to write all my lesson plans out, and I wanted to go this way, this way, this way, this way. And what I've learned also just being is that it's liberating just to be like water and just go, what's going to happen next? And I used to fear that. Now I sort of embrace it. It's really being like water is liberating. That's all I have to say.
I guess that ice cube has melted into the ocean, huh?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I found that image of milk and compassion really moving. I was wondering if you could speak to that a bit more.
I'm sorry, you got choppy there. Could you repeat it?
I was just saying that I found the metaphor for compassion, the water and the milk, very moving. I was hoping you could speak to that a bit more.
I think actually from what was said, you know, I think we get in this place of stuckness where we are kind of frozen and we feel like ice cubes. And perhaps thinking of ice cubes that are never melting, that Shohaku was actually commenting on the glaciers and that the glaciers have been frozen for thousands and thousands, if not millions of years. I think more like thousands and thousands. But that they always have the potential to melt. And these days, we're seeing that the glaciers are melting. And merging with the ocean. And I guess we look at that as a negative thing, but I'm sure that there's positive parts too. But just when we can melt and become fluid and let go of our form, of Ice Cube and become part of the whole, that perhaps we can let go of our judgments and isolation and boundaries that we have with everything else and not be that blip on top of the whole world anymore. And have compassion and sympathetic joy with everybody and everything. And if anybody else wants to hop in and comment about any of these things that people are saying, I don't have to be the solo answerer.
I have a thought.
Okay.
As I was thinking about our way of separating ourselves, and it's hard for us to not see ourselves as separate, I was in my own mind, I saw two ways of kind of looking at this. And one is when I think of the universe is me, or I am the universe. And for me, when I say it's easier for me to think of I am including everything rather than when I think of the universe as including me. In other words, when I say the universe is including me, it's still like a separate entity. Like I am a separate thing that is included there. But somehow for me, when I think of I am the universe in this and I include everything, somehow that intuitively helps me embrace that a little bit more about not being separate, because it's not that I'm out there with all of you, but you are all in here with me. Do you see the difference? Anyway, it's just my personal experience today. Oh, that's it.
Does anyone else have something to say about that? A friend of mine, Norm Randolph, who is a teacher at Dharmafield, I think years ago got a birthday card from one of his sons that says, "You are unique, just like everyone else." That's just perfect how we view ourselves.
Yeah, I'd like to share real great experience of non-separation with water, and I appreciate this teaching in terms of really bringing this to mind. But in the summer, one of the things that I do is that I swim in a lake. I learned to swim and did all my Red Cross training in a lake. I grew up by White Bear Lake. And so we were in the lake a lot. But what I realize is, and I used to do this, is when I lived in Bloomington, is go out to Bush Lake before the lifeguards were there and swim out. And if you just kind of are out in the lake with your little body, and you can perceive the whole lake, all around you, all this water around you, and just sort of become one with that. And it's the most wonderful experience. I mean, I swim for exercise, but when I have that opportunity, I just kind of sit out there in my own little way in the lake and perceive the whole of it, and just you can be one with it. So if any of you have that opportunity, it's a great integration of this practice. And so thank you for the metaphor in bringing that to mind.
Oh, please thank Dogen.
Thank Thank you. Thank you, Dogen. It really works. It works very well.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
One of the things this whole discussion makes me think about is like, well, what about the mountains? And it's like, I'm sure Myo-on, that's a whole nother Dharma talk, but you know, the mountains contain water and the waters contains the mountains just in a different form. And so they're not separate, but it's just our minds are in the relative world. We don't see it that way. It's hard to see the mountain as water, but over time it would certainly transform into such. So anyway, I'd be curious at some point if you want to elaborate on the mountain.
Well, I'll just say a tiny bit.
Okay.
To say it's concentrating. So the mountains are more formal and and of course the mountains and water exist just together, and you can even think of rivers flowing through the mountains, and they over time shape the mountains by flowing through the mountains, and so it can be that the metaphor for form and emptiness, because in many ways, although both are form and emptiness, of thinking of the water in more the emptiness realm and the mountains in a formal realm, but existing just right together with no separation. And it is a whole nother talk. And perhaps I can give someday, or somebody else who's giving a talk can give someday too. So, all right, is that good? Edo, if you have anything to add, please do.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. That talk might be called something like Mountains Are Walking. That's a big theme in the book. Mountains Are Walking. Anyway, I'm not going to say any more. You can contemplate that.
Yes. That they're seemingly solid, but that might be a fallacy.
Hi, this is Lorraine. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just listening to, well, kind of going off of the idea of, you know, the separate self in the universe, and a few people have commented on that. And I was just thinking that I listened to a talk that John Lewis gave this week, or he didn't give it this week, but it was recent. And he was just so clear about, we have to be one. We can't be separate. And we can't have one race and another race be so separate. We need to be together. We need to be united. And that just, I was just thinking about that this morning as, you know, you were talking about the separate self, and we have so many separate selves in this country, and, you know, trying to unite all that is, it's the ongoing work. So anyway, Just a brief comment. Thank you. It was a wonderful talk, Neil Owen. Well,
thank you. And in actuality, race is a construct that human beings have created, that people, for people to distinguish themselves from other people. And so in our relative world, there's all kinds of judgments and definitions of all many different human beings and other beings, and anything we encounter that to in some way separate ourselves. But really, in actuality, as I said before, what is it, where 60% water and 40% other things, but those other things, those skin and bones and other components of our body, are all the same. That individuals might have an affinity for being a better musician or being some type of scholar or for getting cancer or for having heart attacks, but essentially most of our components our physical components are at like 99% the same, or maybe more than that even, and our inclinations to define ourselves and others is really a huge cause of our suffering in our world. And when we can see our commonality and emphasize what's the same versus what's different, there's a possibility for harmony. And I'm not trying to say that there's no differences, so please don't think I'm saying that. But perhaps there's ways to celebrate and be joyful about the different ways that different people and other beings can contribute to our joyfulness and our lives. You know, even in our own individual lives, sometimes right now I'm giving a talk as a Zen teacher, and sometimes I'm a mom, and sometimes I'm a grandma, sometimes I'm a wife, sometimes I'm this old lady walking around, or older lady. It's hard for me to think of myself as old, I'll say that, but to just be somebody walking around the lake, or all the different aspects of me. And there's different aspects, but if there's an underlying current of equanimity and uprightness, those can inform all the different roles I might play in my life. And that can be broadened to all of society, really.
Yoshin, did you want to say something?
Dude, I really appreciate this conversation and everyone's comments and, you know, on bringing this forward. And also, of course, like you said, you know, on mountains are mountains and rivers are rivers, you know, also. I mean, that's the brilliant thing I think about Buddhist teaching. It's not just one big mush, you know?
As yes. Like,
and when I see that clearly, I really appreciate another person or another flower or this moment, because it's unique. it is unique and it's not unique, you know? But I think when we can acknowledge all of that, that's a really powerful place to stand. So that's all.
Thank you. Are we getting to about time? Eno, how much more time do we have?
We have about 5 minutes.
Okay.
And if people are, if the conversation's finished, we can finish too. So maybe we can see if anyone else wants to speak.
I can sing a little song with my out of tune voice. I am the mountains, I am the rolling hills, I am the flowers, I am the daffodils, I love the fireside when all the lights are low. Boom diada, sing along to yourselves. Boom diada, boom diada, boom diada, boom diada, boom. That's it for me.
Perfect place to end, I think. Okay.